Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, this is episode number 28 of the Vex on Vex podcast. We are joined today with the one, the only, the immortal, Mr. Johnny Zero.
The people's hero, and brother, I am alive after seeing the MC5.
That is true. Episode number 28 is going to be a blow-by-blow review from VexX and Johnny Zero. We saw the one, the only, informidable MC5.
The five.
The exactly. MC50 tour, actually.
Yeah, absolutely.
50 years ago. Wayne Kramer, 70 years old. He killed it.
Awesome.
He walked out on the stage, Mr. Johnny Zero. All right, let's start at the beginning. For the people who don't know, the MC5 are extremely influential rock and roll, punk rock, and Johnny Zero would say heavy metal band that had spanned many, many decades and had spawned many, many ripoffs and copycats and things of that nature.
Right, well, emerging of, because there was no such thing as heavy metal and punk then, technically, right? I mean, there's documentation of them going back to as early as 62 and 65.
And that's pre-punk, definitely.
Yeah, and pre-metal, too. You know, they were out. So, I mean, it was amazing, guys. And the thing is, I just don't want, you know, those snobby types. They were a footnote in the history, you know, and all that stuff.
That's what someone told you back in the day, right?
Yeah, piece of shit.
Dude,
yeah.
We went to see them. The drummer was the gentleman from Fugazi, whose name escapes me, and I apologize for that. The bass player was the bass player from Faith No More. I adore Faith No More. So that rhythm section is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. The rhythm guitar slash kind of lead, Kim Thayil from Soundgarden fame.
Bass Frehley fame.
The singer was from, hold on, I'm blanking on the name. What's the name of the band?
Zen Gorilla.
Thank you. Zen Gorilla, originally from Delaware.
Yeah.
Now based out of San Francisco.
Yeah.
He grew the afro out.
Yep.
He did really, really well.
And what was that dance you were saying that he was?
I called it a shimmy.
A shimmy. I loved it, man.
I feel like that was probably just what he does. What he did do when they did Kick Out the Jams, which was the second tune of the evening, he kicked hard, like a kick, and I was like, as a vocalist, it's going to knock the wind out of your lungs, you know what I mean? But it was really cool, man.
Dude, when you hear that song, I don't care if it's 100 years from now, 100 years ago, 1,000 years from now, I don't care. There's something about that song, man. It fired people up.
But I want to stress that they're bigger than that tune. Like, I sincerely want to make that
crystal clear.
No, because I saw them live. Like, Wayne comes out. He's 70 years old, right?
Yeah.
He was wearing skin-tight, brand-new, really dark blue jeans, which totally impressed the shit out of me. He had a button-down shirt. He had big, clunky, cool rock and roll black shoes on.
I'd like to meet his tailor.
There you go. And he had his 19, I believe it was a 65 Strat, if it's the same one. It looked like the same one. It had the American flag on it. Had the stars on the headstock.
Yep.
And it was sincerely, the moment he walked out, he was so happy.
Almost like mine, but the Stratocaster version, he did it first.
Most definitely.
Yeah. They're my heroes, I told you. Did you notice his strap?
Yeah, of course. It was the same strap from then, though. Did you notice it was the same one?
Oh, my God, that's so bad.
But I bought the book.
Yeah.
So in the book, it's the same fucking guitar strap. It kind of looks like it would be an ornament of a World War II veteran or something like that.
Yeah, it was awesome. I got Guitar Army, too, by the way, which you got to borrow that for me if you want to. Check it out, or you know, maybe two. Here we go. Kick out the jams, motherfucker! Oh!
So here we are. We're seeing them.
God.
And it was an all-star lineup. Everybody's dead except for the drummer, who he definitely discussed on stage, which is kind of amazing.
Yeah.
Wayne, at 70 years old, is spry. He's a great guitar player.
He looked great. Did you see him jumping back and forth?
Yeah.
Oh my God, he looks great,
dude. The charisma's still there.
Remember, we're in the one sport you actually get better with age.
I don't know if I agree completely, to be completely.
Well,
but
in this case,
he was great. There was nothing I can say. He was great.
His leads were solid.
They were. The band was airtight. Can you hand me the set list? Because Johnny Zero stole two set lists off the stage. Now, Johnny Zero's set list actually has handwriting on it from Wayne Kramer, which I'm sure makes him very happy. The opening track is Rambling Rose.
He gave it to him.
Which was a little late, but you really?
Yeah.
Are you lying to me?
No.
I didn't know that. You just asked him and he gave it? Well, see, we're in a podcast. Tell me that goddamn story.
No, I don't know if it's illegal or not. Because...
No, he gave it to you. It's not illegal. Well, I thought he stole it.
Jack Anthem or something like that called me that. Anyway, he was a good guy. It was his other guy working there. I don't know. Whatever. They gave it to me. I got two of them. That's how I got one for you too, buddy.
I know you got one for me. Yeah, I was in the lobby buying the book.
Yeah, yeah. I gotcha. But I wasn't coming out there with empty handed. MC5, you kidding me?
So,
well, my pal, you can.
It was on Spring Garden Street in Philadelphia. The name of the venue was. It's escaping
the Grand Transfer
Union.
Union Transfer.
Sorry.
Which is relatively new as a rock and roll venue. The Union Transfer used to be the Spaghetti Warehouse.
Yes, that's right.
Which is where I've had dinner many, many times back in the day. And now it's a live venue, and it's intimate. It's got the character of like a Trocadero theater, but much smaller, much more intimate. Awesome stage, great lights, good sound. Mm-hmm. They opened it up with Rambling Rose, which was a kind of tame for a song from the MC5, although very good. Kind of laid back.
But you got to remember, I mean, it was just rock and roll blues, but you know, they're pre-Hendrix too, if you think about it. I mean,
what's that got to do with the price of tea in China?
No, I'm talking about the distortion song list.
But I'm talking about the set list.
Well, Rambling Rose is classic because it's a nice build up because the lead guitarist gets to sing one, and then Robin just kind of, breaks into place.
Except Robin's not around anymore, and it was the gentleman from Zen Gorilla.
I get that, but I felt like the spirit of Robin was alive that night. You know,
So they open with Rambling Rose, which is laid back. And then they wanted to kick out the jams. Now, this is an interesting side note. Everybody has their phones out. I did not, by the way.
I know
so
you
were
did.
Crystal clear. I was trying to enjoy the moment and enjoy the concept of what it was. But fans had their phones out and were recording this.
Yeah.
And they break in to kick out the jams as the second tune, which is madness because it's arguably their biggest, most successful tune.
Right.
Arguably, or like most popular.
Right.
Melee ensues, craziness, hijinks, these dirty, filthy, obviously street people, punk rock human beings start to mosh, but none of us are young men. This is like in a situation where
I got no problem with the pit, man.
I didn't like it.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you know, it's like that guy was a jackass. I mean, this is the MC5, man.
Well, we were stage
center. It's like
a
big one. Right.
We were in the first row in the front.
Yes.
Because we stood there. We waited through the other opening acts.
Dude, I don't mind a little pit thing, but you know, don't you know, over top hand when I'm you know not looking, you know what I mean? Like,
so
over,
madness ensued.
You know,
Johnny Zero,
this is my opinion.
So, anyway, madness ensues. Johnny Zero puts his hands on some people, which I was definitely impressed by, and then I felt the need to pull out my fucking cell phone and I tape a verse of Kick Out the Jams.
And I
put it on the Facebook and I put it on Instagram and it got a lot of likes.
Awesome!
I know, right?
Totally awesome.
So that's track two of the evening. The next song, which I'd never heard before, is called Come Together.
Come Together.
Which is really good.
Yeah.
Together then they go into Motor City's Burning. And at this point, we're fourth tune in, right? Oh, go ahead, John. I'm sorry.
No. I'm saying, what did you think of that?
Motor City's Burning. I was going to talk and then you had to step over me and start waving your arms and be like, I'm Johnny Zero.
Sorry, buddy. I'm excited about it.
And now you're talking over me because you're much more.
Come on, buddy.
And as you're talking over me right now, there we go. So Motor City's Burning happens. Now sit up, Johnny. We're good. And I fucking, I understand at this point in time that all of the songs have the same thing in common of fantastic groove.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is really powerful.
Yes.
And really good. Like, I am not an MC5 fan like yourself. As we were standing there waiting for the bands to come up and start to perform, random people were approaching Johnny Zero, who had his original MC5 t-shirt on from the 60s, literally. And they're like, is that an original shirt, man? And he's like, oh, I don't really know. You know, I'm Johnny Zero. I'm in Nation Zero. I've heard very important people.
Oh, come on, man.
But for real, a lot of people did approach you about that t-shirt.
Yeah. Well, there was one other guy there that had it, too, and I think, and they asked me, like, I'm like, does it matter? Like, even if I spray painted MC5 on the front of my...
It counts.
It counts, dude.
But I can definitively add that all the people were cool and laid back, and everybody supported the MC5 and was there for them, and it wasn't quite sold out, although there were a hell of a lot of people there.
Dude, I don't know. To me, by looks, it looked like you couldn't fit another person there with a shoehorn.
But you and I were up front. Like, we were really, really in the front. So I think if we'd have hung back, it was like more of an open cluster thing. And there was upstairs, too. And you could fit a lot of people upstairs. We didn't even make it up there. We wanted to be on the floor, you know, with the people. But I saw a bunch of musicians there I hadn't seen in years. Like, it was a cool environment.
Dude, the greatest, in my opinion, the greatest, the original greatest rock and roll band from America in the hard rock, punk rock, metal, whatever you want to call it, era. They were, man, it was unbelievable. What I found most amazing was that those songs still have that energy that really just, I mean, my God.
You know what I found amazing?
Yeah. Well, what?
The lyrics are so relevant in 2018.
Absolutely.
And here's what I find interesting.
Yeah.
We're not going to get political and fight, But Wayne Kramer does not like the president of the United States of America and made it very, very clear. And he all of his lyrics, excuse me, were written about a Nixon era United States of America where they didn't like Nixon. So I found that to be kind of interesting and kind of amazing. But go ahead, what's with your face?
No, I didn't. No, I'm just, if that was what you took from it, I didn't hear him say anything.
I
kind of thought it the opposite. No. I thought he was actually behind our president.
The current administration?
Yeah.
You had left for a moment and you had to go out to smoke a cigarette, I believe?
No, I was upstairs.
Then you missed it because he really did slam the president.
Well, because I had to go. That's how.
I'm just
saying. How do you think I got our set lists?
You had to climb trellises and get backstage and kill several people.
Absolutely.
Dude, it's amazing to me, though. You really did. You literally have two of the fucking set lists from the show.
The five.
The last tour we're ever going to see of the MC50.
You know what? I don't know.
Now, what you were saying.
I know. It's the little kid in me. I'm sorry. I don't want to ever see the MC5 go.
But do you think they would make a new record with this lineup? You were kind of expressing you thought they would.
I'm waiting until the Detroit show, which I know Machine Gun is playing at.
Understood.
And I could feel the energy of Sonic. I could feel the energy of Michael and Brother Michael. And oh my God, it's so hard to explain how great this thing was. And I thought the lineup was so good. The songs are still relevant. They're still strong. I personally, I wouldn't have picked so much from the if I had to make a criticism, I would have picked so much from Back in the USA album, although I understand them.
But you said they have to recognize, I'm sorry, not recognize, the word represent all three LPs.
Yeah.
Isn't that what you kind of
thought? Yeah, and the writers too, of course. Because like the MC, the great thing about the, and like guys, I know we had one before and I was like stuttering, and I usually am because I'm nervous on this. And I don't know what it is, on stage I'm fine, but when I do this podcast stuff, I'm like a stuttering idiot. But the great thing about the MC5 is it's five people that think as one entity. That's who MC5 is. And they're the greatest ever to do it. And I can't put the words. All right, after Murder City is Burning, we have Ramalama.
Now, wait. Ramalama.
Fa, fa, fa.
Is obviously for the crowd. And he literally called out the second tier on the stage left side for not singing.
Yeah,
which I thought was pretty fucking cool, actually.
It's fucking awesome, dude. That's with the song. I'm the man for you, baby. That song is great, man. I like Come Together, Motor City's, but I also like the way the set list is. You know, you come out with Ramblin' Rose, high energy, you know, regular rock and roll, you know, and then you got, you know, the all time. My opinion. I'm sorry, guys. I got to mark out here. In my opinion. Arguably, at least in the top five greatest rock and roll songs or anthemic songs of all time, in my opinion. Come Together, high energy again. Then they take it back, tempo-wise. It's a pretty nice set list going, you know, with the blues and, you know, Motor City's Burning. And that was the riot of Detroit and Chicago, excuse me. Sorry, I had something on my, I might have screwed up there. But, you know, man, that's the turbulent times. I mean, like, these guys were in the eye of the storm, literally.
Okay. Now, here, if we're discussing the set list specifically, right?
Yeah.
Ramalama is a big thing.
Yeah.
Borderline was decent. I Want You's decent. Now, listen. I whip out my phone, because no one has their phones out, for Starship. And I didn't know what Starship was. And they introduced it to Starship, and I put the phone up. And I'm waiting, like 30 seconds, a minute. Yo, I fucking hated it. I hate it. Out of the entire set list, it's the only dud they had, in my opinion, because there's a jazz impromptu middle section, and it didn't have the same building up and explosion that 90% of their songs have. And I was, in my mind, I'm like, oh, I'm going to capture this one. I'm going to get this built up, and I'm going to put it online. And I just kept taping, and it was just not happening. It wasn't delivering for me.
Brother, can you do me one favor? And I do want to make just clear what he's talking about is that is the new lineup's rendition of Starship, as opposed to the original that was on Kick Out the Jams, the record, which would require, I listened to it. I got part of that myself, and I listened to it over and over again, and I kind of thought that Robin would be happy that the kid was, you know, doing his own thing.
But which is understood. It's that I didn't like it. I paid money.
I understand that. And I totally understand.
And I'm a musician.
But the sound man could have helped.
That's not true. Bad is bad. Like, this is a band that fucking pinned me to the wall for like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 tunes. I mean, like, hammered it.
The greatest ever.
Hammer down, right? Mm-hmm. The groove, the vibe, mm-hmm. the vamps, the build-ups.
Absolutely.
The charisma of speaking even in between songs. Yep. It was really great.
High energy, man.
And so I whip out my phone because no one else is taping. I'm like, I'm going to get this moment.
What's
and
the rev?
The fucking song was like, it won't end. And I remember thinking, bro, the guy, because you know when you're at a mm-hmm. very close concert, people start mm-hmm. drinking, they're rubbing against you.
Mm-hmm.
The person next to me started touching me, and I said something to him because this song, Starship, made me so angry. At the end, I was just like, fuck this song and fuck these people.
But please understand that song is a recreation of what was on the original Kick Out the Jams record in 1968 when it came out. So they're experimenting with jazz here, bro. They've written songs with Sun Ra. And, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, down the line. And for real, not just to say, oh, look, we played it with a jazz guy. We're experimenting. No, they meant it, man. And I agree with you. I think if you turn up the verb, make it more wet for the kid during that part, I think that's better. I understand that middle part is what you're worried about, and I understand. But I still like the leaving the solar system. It's an oddball song to begin with, and it's in a good way. But that's the MC50's version of it. You know what I mean? Like, you got to hear the original.
I didn't like it, though. I can have that opinion.
Fair, yes, you
like,
can.
You're like, oh, well, if they did it in 71, blah, blah.
No, it wasn't good.
It just wasn't good.
I got you, but you're also talking about it's a different band, too. It's a different guys, you know?
But I don't know the old band like you know the old band.
Oh, fair enough.
So then they save it. They come with, I Can Only Give You Everything.
Yeah.
Good tune, man. Good tune. The high school tune I could have probably done without.
I loved it.
I don't know.
Sis Boom Ba. High school. Ba. Yeah, I thought that was good. It's a Back in the USA song.
Go ahead.
Okay. Shakin' Street. I love Shakin' Street because it was a tribute to Fred. Fred was a you know, they have three major big albums. There's a couple albums, Thunder Express, etc. Great record. Is High Time. It comes after Kick Out the Jams. Remember, after Kick Out the Jams is pulled off the shelves. Like, if me and you... Dude.
Well, actually, do me a favor.
Yeah.
They don't know. The people listening, mm-hmm. please give... I know it, and you know it. Tell them. Give them that information. So the MC5 gets signed. I'm going to start, and I want you to finish it, because you know it much better than I do.
Sure,
buddy.
No, it's okay. Yeah, we'll do it as a team, man.
The gentleman who managed the Ramones in the first 5 years of their career...
Mm-hmm.
Was the gentleman who worked for Elektra Records and was in care of the Doors when the Doors were huge, like coming off of Light My Fire. He pisses off Jim Morrison because he wouldn't let Jim Morrison drive drunk from a party, remember? And he said, fire this kid off my shit. So the kid lost the Doors,
mm-hmm.
and he went to fucking Michigan, literally. And he finds the MC5 who go, oh, by the way, there's this little brother band we totally dig. Iggy and the Stooges. I'm sorry, just called the Stooges. Actually, it was the Psychedelic Stooges.
Freaking love them.
And he's like, you got to see them. And so he signed both of them for like $20,000, which is nothing, right?
Right.
But, you know, for kids who were living in their parents' basement, this is pretty good money. They're fucking 20
right, and also the thing people don't understand, just to piggyback off what you're saying, brother, is that people don't realize, like, you know, in the New York, in the 70s it was New York City, you know, the 80s was L.A., and the 90s was Seattle, you know, Detroit. The Chalk, baby, was the best, was the scene.
Nugent, man.
Yeah. The Amboy Dukes.
Like, Amboy for real. Dukes. But go ahead, I want you to pick up the story for me. So they get signed to Elektra, and?
So John Sinclair is the manager.
Which is not a smart move, really.
Well,
But go ahead. I'm just my opinion.
No, I'm not. But I'm saying, like, what are you going to do? You're gonna take the chance you got to make it, or are you going to complain about it later? I mean, like, man, you just go with it. You say, you know what? Fuck it, man. Let's do it, man. I understand what you're saying. We'll get into that later.
You have to tell the people what happened.
Oh, okay. Well, back in the day, they put out the White Panther Party, the liner notes from John Sinclair. There was a book called Guitar Army, and the MC5, the greatest American rock and roll band in the world at the time. You gotta understand, this is the British invasion is happening. So they're not getting a lot of airplay. So they record the F word on Kick Out the Jams.
Which was live.
Right.
And airtight.
Yep. And the first ever, I mean, this is how much balls these guys had, man. They released the first debut live hard rock, hard punk, hard metal, whatever you want to call it, rock and fucking roll, Rev, the Rev, man, as a debut record, man. Can you imagine?
But then this is the fall. Like, so this, they comes out. It's, yep. It's a red hot record. Yep. Everybody wants it. Yep. And
it basically, if we were working at like a mom and pop record shop type thing, we would get arrested for even selling it.
Gee, why, Johnny? Why would someone arrest you for selling an album?
Well,
maybe tell the story, sir.
Well, I am. I'm saying because it has the word fuck in it, and it's also what it was really about. John Sinclair's revolutionary notes to the White Panther Party, and they're inside the vinyl. I know. I just got the I think 180 or 200 gram version.
Because that matters. Keep going.
I'm just saying it's an amazing record to do that. Is it, you know, debut is just amazing. But anyway, it was very controversial at the time, and you have to understand that there was riots and so forth going on in Detroit at the time. There was just a lot of, it was a very turbulent time, man. It was the late 60s. I mean, they were in the eye of the storm. So,
but Sinclair as the manager is a poor management decision, like in a business sense. Like if you're trying to be like a multinational, mm-hmm. world famous rock and roll, mm-hmm. band, which becomes a business. Now, I'll be honest with you. In 68 and 69, it's not really a quote-unquote business yet, but the band that survived, for instance, like the Grateful Dead, mm-hmm. by the 1980s or 1979, mm-hmm. the Dead is carrying around briefcase like accountants. I remember this like a thing, and they were like, this is like so... Yeah, yeah.
Really?
It became so commercialized.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Such a... And to be honest with you, there's someone named John Lydon, Johnny Rotten.
One of my heroes. Yeah.
He had this great sentence that only the fakes survive. So the fact that the Grateful Dead survives is because they're sellouts and they're fake at the end of the day, and they mm-hmm. want to fucking chase money.
Mm-hmm.
MC5 wasn't about money. They were about revolution, and it mm-hmm. burnt the band to the ground. It did. It wasn't successful.
I don't know. I just know what I saw the other night, and it was great.
It was great.
And I'm just down with them. And it was a different time, though, too.
But we're trying to tell a story, and you're not being very linear or helping. Because if someone listens to this podcast has no idea who the MC5 is or why they're touring as the MC50, this is your chance, your opportunity to tell them everything.
Well,
and we're kind of just going back
and
forth.
The MC...
Okay, talk over me. Go ahead, sir.
Okay.
No, go ahead.
The MC5, I'm trying to make it more clear. The MC5 was the greatest American hard rock, heavy metal, punk rock, any of that stuff, band ever. And they were very much in league as far as sales go with other legendary bands that come from that same era. And that Eye of the Storm kind of swallowed them up with hassles. They got hassled by this, that, the other. And
understood completely. Like, this is like the hippie generation, the standing up for your rights generation. This is what they were doing. But I'm trying to, in our podcast, and it's probably not going to work, and I think I'm going to abandon this in a few seconds. I would like the listening public to understand the story of the MC5.
The basic bottom line story
is
that these guys actually believed that the power of rock and roll could change the world. You have five men who thought as one person, and they didn't give a shit about any of that stuff. I mean, sure, everybody has to eat, you know. But they really believed they could change the world. Now, they got mixed up into some political stuff. Now, you got to remember, some of the band is extremely left. Some is a little extremely right, you know.
Oh, it's pretty fucking left, actually, just so we're clear.
Well, just so we're clear, each individual member has their own individual feelings, and it's a different time.
They're dead, though, Johnny Zero. They're not around, and none of them.
The MC5's never died. Never dies to me.
None of them supported Vietnam. That's a fact. That would be left.
Well, I'm not saying. I'm not going to get into politics with you.
You brought it up.
I'm just telling you that they all had their. We were all strongly, particularly Robin and Sonic, were kind of butt heads at first, and Fred will tell you about. I mean, excuse me, Wayne, brother Wayne will tell you about that. In MC5, A True Testimony, which if you guys have the means, please. It is so choice.
But you don't know what it is. Is it a book? Is it a record?
It's a DVD documentary.
You.
They were going to make a comedy film about the MC5 with, I believe, Adam Sandler. And these are the rumors. I don't know. I wish I did have his number, but I don't. But they were going to make about them going to play the Democratic Convention in Chicago in 68. So, they turned that down, and fans, I know, because I kind of was involved with helping raise some funds for it. I hope I was. To make it. It was MC5, A True Testimonial, and there's still even distribution problems with stuff dating back as far as 68. I really don't understand it, because it's really underneath all this is just one great kick-ass rock and roll band. You know, I don't know about all the I don't want to debate politics or all that stuff. I just want my rock and roll. But this is like the energy is just unbelievable. And as we go down the set list, I can only give you everything. I think they were trying to be fair to every record. The sad part is the third album. Everybody knows Kick Out the Jams, right? And like a lot of the critics and stuff will say like, oh, Back in the USA has the best, you know, sounds great, right? The name Back in the I love the USA, you know, but you know, it just sounds kind of thin compared to High Time, like High Times magazine. I think they were trying to equally represent portions of each album on the set list, but High Times, Fred Sonic, and Brother Wayne will be the first one to tell you that really came into his own as a guitarist and as a singer. And that's when they went over to England, I believe, in 72. I think Brother Michael had left at that point, and they became Sonic. And that's before even Ace, dude. You know, like, and Bowie, to my knowledge. Am I right on that?
Yeah.
Ziggy Stardust? No, okay.
Oh, my God, years later.
Okay.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, okay, cool. I'm just making sure. And, you know.
A lot of people I heard say that visual stuff was definitely picked up by Ace Frehley, most definitely.
Oh, absolutely.
Because he was painting himself kind of like a spaceman before, wasn't he? Like, that was the whole, the look and the silver and the cape and all
sure,
that shit.
Sure, man. I mean, without the Motor City 5, is there a Detroit Rock City?
But it's true. But then to think of it is, when Kiss started, and we'll go down the rabbit hole together because we're both Kiss fans.
Kiss, yeah.
When they started, they were dressing like the New York Dolls, if mm-hmm. I'm not mistaken. And they had like the whole mascara. And then Gene Simmons had that good quote, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, I hope.
Okay.
That basically they were too big to wear women's clothes, and they looked like linebackers wearing like pantyhose.
Football players in a tutu.
Players in a tutu.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is true, like, you know.
Right, right.
I heard that Gene and Paul were pudgy in the beginning. Like, they were kind of like healthy young men. Like Wicked Lester days.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Absolutely. Paul, Paul, I think always still looks good. He looked great the other night.
Paul looks fantastic. He really does. Now, I know we're veering. We're supposed to talk about the MC5 and the MC50, but Ace, fuck it. It's a podcast, and we can veer off. So I want to ask you a question.
Yeah.
I read something. I don't know if it's 100% true, so you have to let me know if it's accurate.
Sure, sure, sure.
Is this the final Kiss tour? That's what I had read 2 days ago.
Oh, the end of the road tour.
Is it real, bro?
Well, I mean, a 3-year world tour.
That's a commitment. That's a commitment.
That's kind of like you're in.
And we know that Ace is on very good terms with at least Gene Simmons right now. Like, they just wrote songs together.
Gene.
Fantastically good terms.
And with his new song and how much people love it, and it is a great song.
It is.
Rocking with the Boys is excellent. Gosh, man, I don't know. I think it might be determined on that cruise coming up, the Kiss Cruise 7.
You think they're gonna? It is coming. Are they going to announce something, you think?
I don't know. This might be like just like Paul's, like they're gonna see if Ace is, you know, being naughty or something.
I didn't
something.
Know Ace
don't
was
know.
On it. Ace is on it.
Yeah,
as Ace, one of the bands. Yep. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
bro.
It's like I don't want to.
There's a lot of bands. There's a lot of bands.
Yeah, I don't want to like bullshit or anything. I think it's like 3 or 4 days or something like that. Like it leaves like Halloween.
Well, it's a cruise. Yeah, that's how it works.
Right. But it's the Kulik brothers.
Which, they have a band.
Yeah.
Why'd you make that face, man?
Because I'm not a big fan of Bob Kulik. But I love Bruce Kulik.
How can you not like Bob, though?
Because he's...
Bob played on the classic Kiss records.
No.
Bob auditioned
Bob
for Kiss.
Bob takes a lot of
liberties.
Yeah. Takes a lot of creative liberties, and I don't want to say anything. And he's a great guitarist, and I'm not out to get him or anything.
He was on the Meatloaf record.
Yeah.
So he can play.
No, that's Bruce.
No, it's not. It's Bob. How much fucking money do you want to bet, motherfucker?
Are you fucking kidding me?
In 1977? Yeah, that's Bob Kulik. Because Bruce was a teenager. No. We're going to pause it. We're going to fight. Please bear with us.
So fair enough.
So here we are. We're back. Just so we're crystal clear, Johnny Zero says, no, Vex, you're wrong. It was Bruce. Why don't you tell the people what you found?
Well, here's the thing. I didn't say.
Just tell the people what you found,
it's
please.
It's Bruce Kulik and Bob Kulik both played together. It's not anything to get
I
mad
wrong?
About.
Tell me, am I wrong? Because you said I was wrong.
No,
I want you to tell me.
No.
Was I wrong?
Neither of us were wrong.
Didn't say you
Bob
were wrong.
And Bruce both. Please.
Stop talking over me, maybe. See, I didn't say you were wrong. You said I was wrong. So I had to pause it. And it kills me because you just think I don't know anything.
No, I don't think that at all. Why are you, like...
Because you relax.
Oh,
because
you told me I was wrong. You know, again.
Well, like, when you read B. Kulik in there.
No, you talk over me. I'll wait here.
I'm not talking over you, buddy. I'm trying to tell you that they both, they're brothers. They both, B. Kulik, Bob Kulik, Bruce Kulik. They both played in the touring band for Meatloaf. I wasn't aware that they both played together. I was just telling you that Bruce Kulik did play with Meatloaf, and you told me it was only Bob because you had a picture.
Actually, that's not what happened. Do you want to hear it? You know what? Stop.
I don't. It's not enough.
So here we go, people. I'm going to replay the snippet from a few minutes ago, and you make the decision. Meatloaf record.
Yeah.
So he can play.
No, that's Bruce.
Now, definitively, that is Johnny Zero telling me no, that was Bruce. Now, here's the worst part. It was Bruce, but it was also Bob.
Yes.
So, when you tell me that I am wrong, it hurts me in my heart.
Well.
And it pulsates down to my soul that clearly you have no faith in me
as an encyclopedia
of rock and roll.
Oh, man.
Now, I'm going to tell you another thing. Mm-hmm. In my understanding of it, and obviously you don't care what my understanding is.
No,
that Bob's on the record, because remember, Todd Rundgren produces the first Meatloaf record. They're not famous.
Mm-hmm.
Then as it picks up steam, they bring out Bruce to play rhythm guitar along with Bob because the band got increasingly bigger. Mm-hmm. That's my understanding.
Rhythm and lead, yeah. I you know, when you're reading these things, sometimes they say B. Kulik. So that could be Bob or Bruce. Or,
but then why was I wrong, brother? Like, you were like, no, it's Bruce.
Because I didn't realize it was Bob myself. So maybe
How
I was
wrong.
How
do you not know it was Bob? And you hate Bob. Like, oh, Bob's the worst.
No, I don't like him.
Why?
I just don't.
That's not an answer.
I don't like his... I don't
he has a beautiful haircut. He's a handsome man.
Oh, I didn't say that. Of course he's a handsome man.
He's not a handsome man.
But he's a damn handsome man. But I'm saying I'm just not a fan of his style. That's all. It's not that I think he's bad. He's a great guitarist. But, you know, some of the... You know, some of the little pot shots at Ace.
And that's what it is. You know. It's not how he plays. He was there for a drunken, messy Ace Frehley. And you who were not there, I might add, and I was not there, you take exception to this. And that's not fair.
Have you ever listened to the studio side of Alive 2?
No.
And okay. Well, you should sometime. Because I've heard even the Ace versions, you know, with the ones where he was cut out and then put in. I'm just saying, the guy is great. Bob Kulik is great. He couldn't lace his own brother's cleats, just in my opinion, but he's nowhere near Ace Frehley. But you know what? Good for him. He's part of their family and all that. And, you know, if this road thing goes well,
it doesn't even make any goddamn sense what you're saying. Like, I asked you a direct question. Of course you didn't answer.
No,
it doesn't matter because you don't even listen to what I say. So I'm not going to say it a third time. However, I'll say it a second time.
Okay.
Your beef is because he spoke poorly about a drunken Ace Frehley when you weren't there and I wasn't there. And this offends you. Now, you know the irony of the whole situation? Stop, don't make that noise. I hate that noise. Ace Frehley doesn't even fucking remember most of the interactions from that time frame, which he will agree with, by the way. And because someone was there and sober and showed up and did some work, you're offended by this.
I'm not offended.
Why can't he tell the truth?
I'm just not a big... I think the elaborations go a little bit further than what they were, and I'm not a big fan of his style. I like his brother's style. I'm just not into his style, and some of the elaborations, you know, and everybody has to make a living, right? So when you're traveling the country, further embellishing these exaggerations, in my opinion.
In your opinion, that's a good part of it.
Well,
in
well,
your opinion.
My opinion, which is based on fact, because I've listened to the demos and so forth from Alive 2 on the studio side, which is a great, great album, by the way. It might be one of my favorite albums of all time.
See, this is a tangent I couldn't care less about.
But no,
You're trying to stick to a point.
It's very important.
It's not, though. You know why? This is the fucking MC5 episode, and I have to hear about fucking Bob Kulik.
You wrote a kiss!
But you can't give the man credit. That's the point. You can't be like, oh, he's pretty good.
You're like,
I don't like him. I don't like his style. I don't like how he talks with his words in his mouth.
Yeah,
is really what your beef is. He's a fine guitar player. You can't say he's not a bad guitar player, but you're like, well, he embellishes.
No, I didn't say that.
Talk over me. Go ahead, I'll wait.
I said, no, I wouldn't say that. I didn't say
As I was speaking, that's called talking over. See, when you're doing the microphone thing together, we should try to correspond off of each other. Instead, this is what it's like. And that's what it sounds like.
Well, it just seemed to me like you were exaggerating what I was saying. I'm not out to, like, bash Bruce, or Bob Kulik, excuse me. But I'm not a big fan of his style.
Exact quote, Johnny Zero.
He
can't lace his brother's boots.
Exactly.
Ah, that's fucked up. That's a little fucked up.
Do you ever listen to Bruce Kulik as opposed to Bob Kulik?
Of course I've heard them both.
Okay.
Are you making a fucking joke?
No.
All the classic Kiss records, though, later in the years, Bob Kulik. All the modern Kiss records, Bruce Kulik. Ironic that, eh?
Yeah. They're going to be playing on that cruise. I mean,
are you going?
My point, no.
Exactly.
No.
Exactly.
But I hear Ace, Richie, and Scotty, Chris are all going.
Who? What's a Richie and Scotty and Chris? The fuck are you talking about?
The Emperor of Rock and Roll, Richie Scarlett.
Couldn't care less. Couldn't care less. Okay. Emperor Rock and Roll, never heard of my life.
Scotty Coogan.
No idea what that is.
Great drummer, singer. Chris Wise from, he was in the Cult. It's the Ace Frehley Band. They're playing there.
Now, when you say the Ace Frehley Band, is it Frehley's Comet, all those people? Or is it a different change-up version of Frehley's Comet from the 80s? Like 30 years later, is it the same band?
No. It's Ace Frehley Band, the new band.
Now, I'm asking a question, though. Who's left from Frehley's Comet?
Nobody. Except Richie Scarlett, the Emperor of Rock and Roll.
He's not an emperor. Never heard of him in my life.
Yeah. Richie Scarlett? Really?
I'll say it slower.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Well, Richie Scarlett.
In my life.
Well, look him up sometime. Richie Scarlett is from the original Frehley's Comet.
And he's still in the band.
Yes.
So before that.
But then Todd, the one that you might know from MTV, was Todd. What are you doing? You see, talking over.
But I didn't watch any fucking videos of that guy on MTV, so I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't have MTV in the 80s. I just didn't have it, so I couldn't see that.
On the YouTube.
What? I haven't seen the videos. Did you hear me say it?
Okay.
Okay, so don't tell me that I remember something that I didn't see.
Well, Richie Scarlett is not in the original Frehley's Comet.
So then that's my answer. No one is left from the original Frehley's Comet. As in zero, except for Ace Frehley.
I'm trying to.
I'm asking a question.
Yes, there is, because I'm trying to explain it to you. Richie Scarlett was in the. If you let me finish.
Actually, this is important.
Richie Scarlett.
No, this is important. Hold on, please. Please hold on. You just said no one's left from the original Frehley's Comet. And then 1 second later, you're like, except Richie Scarlett. So wait, is Richie Scarlett in the original? Yeah, this is a yes or no. In the original Frehley's Comet?
Yes.
So on that first record. And that first live band, Richie Scarlett's in it.
The first live band, yes.
So not on the record.
The version that, of the video, you know, no.
I never saw videos, sir, so it doesn't help me.
Well,
so wait, I'm just confused. Was he in the band or not?
If I'd be allowed to finish your sentence.
Just talk for 5 minutes.
And I'm not being a dick here.
Like, a little bit.
No, I'm not, man. You just be cool. Listen to what I'm saying to you.
Mm-hmm.
There was two different versions of Frehley's Comet when he first started out. And they did. He did it at the SIR Studio Instrument Rentals, and he did some recordings.
This is important. Where it was would not matter in your story. I am not a fan.
I couldn't finish.
Can I talk for 1 second in my own podcast? Are you sure?
Yes.
No, are you sure? Because it seems that you're offended. I am not a fan of Frehley's Comet. Never have been. Haven't. You're gonna talk over me. Go ahead. You cut me off. I'll wait.
No, man. It's just. I'm trying to explain something that's a little bit complicated. That's all. I'm not trying to be rude or anything.
I don't need you to explain something. I asked you a question. So was the guy in the original band or not? And you said
yes.
It was. So then what the hell? So from 30 years ago, the only person left is Richie Scarlett and him.
Yep.
Where's the drummer?
Anton Figg.
Okay. It's Anton Figg. I know where that guy is. Where's the bass player?
John Regan, I believe he's in Four by Fate with Todd Howarth, who is would be popularly known as, based on video stuff, of being the original rhythm guitarist, lead singer, co-lead singer of Frehley's Comet.
What's the name of that band? What's the name of that band?
Four by Fate.
Never heard of them.
I believe so. Fate by Four or Four by Fate? Four by
you don't even know.
No, I just
want to. You're the Ace band.
No, man, you got... It's just a complicated thing to explain to you, and like
not really.
It is because listen, when they come out, they record. They're already cutting tracks with Richie and Ace, right? Then when they get to the record company, then it becomes Todd and Ace because of Richie. Because Todd was the backup singer for what's this guy's name from Cheap Trick?
No, but brother, listen, stop. I don't know who Todd is. I don't know who Richie is. So really, we're going in a circle that you're trying to explain to me of something I don't comprehend.
I know, and
no, it's like trying to tell a frog how to put a car together. I don't know how to put a car together. I'm a frog. So I have no idea what you're saying.
Well,
can we maybe go back to the MC5?
Absolutely. You brought the one that you brought up Kiss. I didn't.
That's true. I drew a direct comparison to the dead guitar player from the MC5 and saying that Ace Frehley kind of nicked his look. That's what I had said.
Okay, I don't know if that's true or not, but I think I think that Sonic deserves mention. Yes, and I'm sure Ace would agree.
But why do you say it's not true? Explain.
Well, I mean the silver face and the cape and all that,
which is he did have it.
Yeah, and he had the fin on his head and all that shit. Well, when they went over to England, and this is like
who went over to England?
The MC5,
okay,
the original five, and the real five. They went over there and.
you know, they were experimenting with stuff. You know, glam had was New York Dolls was coming out. I mean, this was like really experimental shit.
No, the Dolls didn't exist back then.
Yeah,
they didn't exist back then.
Well, whatever that became the Dolls. This is we like I think 71, 72, something like that.
I hear you.
I could be wrong on the exact
glam,
date.
Just so we're clear, the Dolls didn't exist yet. Okay. In that time frame, that's all.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I'll
be honest with you. Can I say something else?
Mm-hmm, sure.
A band from Motor City, who's older, wouldn't have been influenced by the younger, not as tight band. Because like nothing else, right?
Right, right.
In Motown, you have that great groove, yes. And this band had that.
Absolutely.
And the New York Dolls did not have that.
Absolutely, dude. And that was what the more important, bigger picture is. In my opinion, the greatest thriving music scene of all time is that Detroit scene of the late 60s. I mean, you have Motown over here. You have MC5. You got Stooges. You got Amboy Dukes. You even got the guy from the Eagles. And I mean, it was just so much going on, man. As a matter of fact, on High Time, that third MC5 record, that's the one that's underrated. But it, you know, it wasn't getting much distribution.
Oh, my God, say your point. No, for real. On the third record,
the one of the background drummers, was Bob Seger, believe it or not, made one of his. I don't know if it was his recording debut or not. I don't know. I'm not.
But pretty close.
I'm not alert.
But
yeah.
Pretty close.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Glenn. What the hell?
Pretty
is his
big
name?
Break.
Who's the guy who died from the Eagles? Jesus Christ, this is embarrassing. Glenn.
Glenn Frey.
Fry.
Fry.
Glenn Fry.
He's Detroit too.
When he was 16, was a bass player. For the Silver for Bob's band,
yeah, and he was also in another band, if I'm not mistaken. From that, I mean, people don't even realize. I don't even realize there's some documentaries out there, but to realize there that much turbulence.
Isn't the American band thing kind of from? No, they're not from around there, are they?
The Grand Funk Railroad. I don't
yeah,
know.
But no, they're. Hold on, where's that Michael Moore guy from?
Michael Moore, I don't. Oh, the what that director?
Yeah, that guy who you hate. Michael Moore is from. Oh, it's on the tip of my tongue. That is where Grand Funk Railroad's from. They're from the same town.
Oh, yeah.
It's where the water doesn't work right now.
But anyway, there's so much fucking music talent from that Detroit scene. It really is the first Seattle. I had to look it up, and I still need to, obviously. But dude, it'll amaze you. I mean, you got James Brown, you got all this stuff, you got the MC5, I mean, there's such a thriving scene, and it really is the, oh my God, man, it's like the crux, the central part of the musical universe and culture at the time. I mean, it was explosion, man. It was the eye of the storm, and the MC5 was there. Let's go. What's the next song on the set list?
Shaking
Street.
No, Call Me Animal, actually.
Okay.
And you weren't there for that one. And you told me how great it was. Now I'm going to tell you. I did not appreciate the tune. It fell short. Like, you had built it up for me, like driving to the show and all. And you're like, yo, this is really good.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just wasn't into it.
Fair enough. Hey, all things for all people. I like the fact that I want to reiterate Shaken Street, because that was Fred's, I believe it was like his like debut, his Shock Me, so to speak, if you were making that comparison again. After that, we have I Love Future Now. Freedom's yours right now if you're willing. You know, that's so good, man.
Flint, Michigan. I'm so sorry. Yeah. Michael Moore's from Flint, Michigan, and yeah. So is Grand Funk Railroad.
Okay.
Which is... Yeah.
Dude, look, I'm not a big fan of... I don't want to get into the movie politics.
No, I'm trying
stuff.
To tell you this. I didn't say politics. I said something. So that's the Grand Funk Railroad's from that region.
Yeah.
It's all kind of the same thing. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
Yeah, yeah.
Flint, Michigan.
Like, dude, it would amaze you other artists that you know of.
If you tell me Freddie Mercury's from there, I'd be amazed, but I know he's not, so I'm not.
Right, no, but I'm telling you, some of the people that are from that area that time may not have been, like, that star that you know them as at the time, but in other bands, it'll make you do backflips, I'm telling you.
It'll make you do backflips?
No shit, man, I ain't bullshitting you, I'm telling you.
It sounds like you're bullshitting a little bit.
Detroit, I'm telling you, man, Rare Earth, all that, man, I'm telling you, dude, it's like, it was the most thriving music scene in, perhaps ever.
It can't be forever. It just can't be. 70s New York is pretty happening. Early 60s London's pretty happening. Like, I don't know, man.
Yeah, I'll take late 60s. I'll get my money on late 60s Detroit and whatever we come up with now today.
Well, it's... But California's really bumping. Stop, like, the L.A. thing, the West is the best. In the late 60s, they were happening now.
Right.
I don't know. The Call Me Animal thing, it fell flat for me. It wasn't as powerful as it should have been. What are your thoughts perhaps about where it was in the set? Because it's at the very end almost.
I wouldn't have played it that. I think it was a good song. I think, I think they're trying to be fair to all three albums and all five musicians of the original five. I think they were using that as a, I don't know if you know what Brother Wayne does to.
Can you just call him Wayne? He's not my brother. And that's weird to me. So just if you could just.
Brother Wayne Kramer.
Yeah, please call
Brother
him.
Wayne
but
Kramer.
But he's not my brother. I don't have any fucking brothers. Just call him Wayne. I don't like that. I'm not a hippie, man. I'm being dead serious with you. It's like grating to me in some way. Like, my brother. He's not my brother. He's some old man who's 70.
They're not hippies, by the way. They were more.
Yeah, well, definitely not a hippie.
They were more associated with, like, the.
Oh, my God. John Sinclair's a fucking hippie, man. What are you talking about?
Yeah, but John Sinclair doesn't play in the MC5.
He was their management, though.
Right.
So when you're really going to tell me they weren't fucking.
Well, he managed Trans Love Energies, was more of a
commie. You're going to tell me that band wasn't fucking hippies.
I didn't say that.
You didn't say that.
You didn't let me finish my sentence.
They were
actually more associated with being the word yippies or like, SDS, White Panther Party, etc.
If that was your answer, I respect it. I am sorry I cut you off, but I fucking hate yippies more, actually.
Okay, well, whatever.
Because that was mental illness. Did you know that? Yeah, so the guy who was the head of the Yippies was diagnosed later as being, like, out of his fucking mind, which is why he was inspired to do, like, levitate the Pentagon and the whole fucking thing.
Right.
To try and use humor. And Abbie Hoffman, that's his name. I actually kind of liked Abbie Hoffman.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was on the run because he tried to sell a whole bunch of cocaine in the 70s. And he got pinched. No, for real. He got pinched, and then he went on a run for, like, 5 or 6 years. And in that 5 or 6 years, he couldn't even keep his mouth shut. He, like, saved some river or ocean in New York.
What?
It was a river, yeah. You didn't know about that?
No.
Yeah, so Abbie Hoffman goes underground. I think it's 5 years.
I have a book somebody gave to me to learn.
Steal this book. That's the book, right? Steal this book.
I don't know. It didn't have a cover on it. It was like a paperback.
What'd you think of it?
Well, I only read the parts that had something to do with MC5. Too truthful. I didn't really give a shit about anything else.
No, Abby's all right. He was just mentally ill.
Yeah.
So the most prolific...
Yeah.
Comedy yippie of his generation
right.
was only doing that.
Vietnam, right?
See, you're
right.
It was based on him, and the movie we're speaking of is Forrest Gump. That's what
right.
You're talking
is
about.
That is that the, is
it's
that
based on him?
Based now, on him. Okay, fair enough. I like his shirt. I'd like to meet his tailor.
Interesting. At any rate, he was mentally ill. And he was diagnosed years later, and he was put on, like, medicine. They had a son. The son's name America. He grew up. He changed his name. Now, you don't know this about Abbie Hoffman.
That's cool.
But he went to college. He got a law degree and became an attorney. And then when the country started to change around him, he kind of went off the deep end.
Right.
And he took his knowledge. He really did know the rules. He was a brilliant, learned attorney, for lack of a better term. And he went off the deep end, and he dove into hippie culture.
Yeah.
And he got a woman, he had a couple other women, they had a baby.
Right.
Thing.
See, I've heard him portrayed as, like, this rebellious kind of, like, revolutionary leader, and I've also heard him more times than not portrayed as, like, a jackass. But I don't really know.
You know what's fine, Ronnie?
Not saying because I wasn't there.
Both are true. I can definitively say that because...
Yeah.
So we got a little famous and got a little power. And you got to understand that back in, like, 1968, 70, there's only three TV channels, three television stations.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're famous, you're fucking famous. And if you're in the news every night, everybody knows who you are. And there was a point where the federal government, the FBI, was, like, fucking with Hoffman and his wife and their kids so badly, like harassment, that they couldn't get, like, welfare, and they couldn't get jobs or anything because people were, like, just, like, burning bridges. So I remember that the mom went to the welfare office because she had a little baby, and she's like, I need food stamps. And they're like, you're on television. You're famous. You don't fucking need money, which is misnomer. Like, they weren't famous. And he had donated all the money he got. I think maybe it was for the book. He gave it right to the Black Panther Party. And then he didn't pay taxes on it because he gave it to them. And so he never had tax evasion on him. Like, the feds really get you if they want to get you.
That's thank you for that story. What's your sources on that?
I read. It's not fucking difficult, man.
Well, no, I'm
no, there's no.
So do I, but I'm saying.
No,
like,
but that's why. No, I'm just saying. I just read about it. It's not like heavy. Like, it isn't like I'm like.
But that era, you know. It's the turbulent times. It's just like you hear, read this here. You read
well, you know what's
something
ironic?
Contradictory there.
I'm glad you said that. Can I say something on that?
Sure.
Seriously, this is what I find ironic about hippies and why I despise hippies to this fucking day. And you're my friend, and you're my brother. I want like, I'm not supposed to say hippie shit, but you're my bro. I love you. So I want you to, like, I want to tell you my feelings, and I want your opinion on what I'm about to say.
Sure. Okay?
This is an entire generation that's brought up by the World War II generation, who you and I probably think of as the greatest generation. You know what I mean? Like, they were really, they went, you don't like the World War II generation?
I love the World War
II. Exactly, and I knew you did. That's the greatest generation. Their children grow up in a very, very comfortable America. The people who went to World War II grew up in the Depression and were from that and understood what it was like.
Love them too.
It's the same people. So those kids now go to World War II. They come home. They get suburbs and they get really good jobs. And America's thriving from the 50s to 60s. Mm-hmm. These kids can now go to college, which is still very affordable at the time. Their parents can pay their way. They get degrees, and they get underwhelmed by the system. Nixon, in particular, who's a holdout or a leftover from 1950s America, he's not, like, modern. Mm-hmm. And they do this whole thing where they're like, fuck the government and fuck Vietnam and blah, 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 right? Eventually, Nixon's own things get him out of office. They're very happy. They get Carter in office. Or they have Ford for a little while. They get Carter in office. They're very, very happy. Mm-hmm. Carter has a lot of uphill work to do, which isn't against him. He's not. Hold on. I'm talking. And then you can say whatever you want because you were doing that. And you were going to come.
I didn't do anything. I had an itch, man. That's all.
Oh, you have to breathe for your itch? Anyway, Carter's the president for a little while. Does his 4 years. And the government becomes different, it's looser, it's laxer, and all these fucking kids who were in college in 67 and 68 now have mortgages. They have kids of their own. They're fucking adults. And they turned around and they vote in Ronald fucking Reagan twice. Mm-hmm. And then George Bush Sr. for a third term. So you really get Reaganomics for 12 fucking years, right? Now, there's points of Reagan I appreciate. Iran-Contra did fucking happen, which makes him a bit of a hypocrite, by the way. But we won't even talk about that. My point is, peace, love, rock and roll, waving the flag, and then they grew up and they voted in their fucking dad to be president three times. What are your thoughts on that? Like, they turned on a dime, is what I'm saying.
I don't know. I have no problem with Ronald Reagan. I think he was a kick-ass president.
He was all right.
I think...
Reaganomics is rough.
I don't think there's any president that's perfect, and I'd rather just
that's
talk.
Not what I'm
saying.
Stick no,
music.
Bro, that's not what I just said. I said the hippies were fucking hippies, and they grew up and got a mortgage and voted in their Republican father.
Right.
And that's my point. Like, if you're gonna start
right.
at 17 years old burning your draft card, which I don't support, by the way, right? But if you do that, fucking be that person. Don't turn 30 and go, oh man, I was just kidding. I'm gonna work my job and get my mortgage, and I'm gonna get a Republican president.
The irony of the whole thing.
It was a phase. Your entire fucking stance was a phase. Your political ideology was bullshit. Right. They became what's called yuppies. They sold out. They bought in.
Yeah. What the fuck was yuppies?
Young urban professional. It's young all urban those professional. Hippies got degrees. Now here's how it gets. This is when it starts getting dark for real. Like, our situation, it's my computer, I'm sorry. Our situation is that you're a hippie, you're in the mud, free love, giant crazy pubic hair, the whole thing, right?
Right.
And then the 70s are like, we're going to do cocaine and we're going to dance now. Like, we were really into the Grateful Dead. And now we're going to get into disco. Because the kids were into Kiss, but this wasn't the kids I'm talking about. Now these are the fucking adults, right? Mm-hmm. So disco happens, Studio 54 happens, cocaine happens, the world changes. This brings us AIDS in a couple of years. Like, it gets really, no, for real though, it gets dark. And they bring in Reagan to clean up the country. This is what it's about. These fucking assholes, they're pieces of shit. They sell out. If you're going to be a flag burning hippie at 18, don't tell me at 30, you're like, I was just kidding. Now I'm all about the government. You're an asshole. Like, I don't like hippies, right? Mm-hmm. But I would respect a hippie that's a hippie in 68, 78, 88, 98. You understand what I'm saying?
Sure.
But if you change your stripes, now I don't trust you.
Well, if you can see what I'm wearing on my shirt, I just tell them, you know, anybody doing that, you try and burn this one, motherfucker. You know what I mean?
One knows what's on your shirt.
I have an American flag on my shirt.
But what's your point?
Try and burn this one, asshole. It used to be a shirt that I'm getting soon. You know, I guess it's like a vintage shirt.
Bro, can you please give me a point? Because you're losing me fast.
You're saying that every hippie, you're talking about everything in such extremes. You're saying that every hippie
means that they are burning the flag or something like that. That's not always true. I mean, there's not everything is always in extremes. There's different groups inside the thing. I just want to be sure. How do you feel about that? I mean, I'm saying like,
well, I hate hippies. That's how I feel about that.
Right.
Despise them. Just so we're crystal clear. Okay, so all the hippies didn't burn flags. Doesn't change a fucking thing. You're still a fucking hippie, okay? If you're waving the free love flag in 69, and then in 79 you have platform shoes on, cocaine and disco, you're an asshole.
Right.
That means you're following a fad.
Oh, yeah.
But that's the thing. You're a fad.
No,
because
no,
those
same I agree
people,
with that. Yeah, they're posers.
They're posers, and that's what I hate. Like,
yeah, I fucking hate posers, too.
If your ideology is your ideology,
sure.
Whether I agree or disagree, like,
right.
I am not a fan of the current president,
right.
But he's always been who the fuck he is. We never had him waving a flag in the 70s going burning it. For real, it just wasn't him. He's been a Republican businessman. I'm sorry, he was a Democrat, actually, but he was a businessman his entire life. And he was about that bottom line his entire life, which I have to respect because he never wavered. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
But these people are just like, we're going to change the world. We're going to do it. And they wrote in fucking Reagan. Now, no hippie in 1970, because Reagan was the governor of L.A., beating up those kids on the Sunset Strip with the fucking guards because the kids were out of control, let's be honest.
Mm-hmm.
But the National Guard was beating them up at the behest of Governor Ronald Reagan. And 10 years later, he's the fucking president.
Well,
voted in by the same people.
Right. But still, I think he's the last. Other than the current one, I see. I don't
want
to get.
No, I don't want your opinion. I'm talking about hippies.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, they're pieces of shit. I don't believe it. I'm sorry. That whole like hippie ideology is dead. It's always been dead. I can respect punk rock because punk rock didn't give a fuck.
Fucking right,
they burnt it down, and that's what's about now. This is a last ditch effort. This is not my problem, but I'm going to tell you the truth of it. When I was a kid, Howard Stern was the outside of entertainment. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
He mocked everyone. He fucked with everyone. Mm-hmm. He was brilliant. He was funny. And he was scathing. Mm-hmm. And as a child at 11, 12, 13, 15, 18, I adored this man.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Now he's the former host of America's Got Fucking Talent. Like, he finally gets to the big show. He's undeniable. Bradley Cooper goes on his show. Big stars. Right? And instead of burning the place down like he's supposed to, he's like, oh, I'm going to go to Jennifer Aniston's wedding. La, 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 la. You didn't even know that, did you? He is on microphone saying that, and I quote, Jennifer Aniston has a rancid cunt. This is what he said. And then a decade later, he went to her wedding as a guest. That's a hypocrite. And I can't back a hypocrite. If you mean it, say it. And
I
dig it. And if you just change on a dime, nothing for you.
I definitely agree with that. But I mean, like, I also believe that, life is it's possible to formulate and change, who you are over time. But I think that I couldn't agree more as far as posers go.
I want to acknowledge what you said there. That sentence makes sense to me, and I want to stress that to the world. You do grow and you do change.
Yeah.
But don't be an extreme hard line in either direction if you're going to change later. You understand what I'm saying?
I agree with
that's
that.
That's what kills me.
That's what
draw a line in the sand and then step over the fucking line.
That's what I don't fucking understand about these fucking like when you get into a car, you take it all the way to the left and hit the gas, you're going around a circle. Take the car, turn it on, turn it all the way extremely to the right, too. Guess what? You turn around in circles.
John.
You need to balance it to go to
forward. That is the fucking greatest sentence ever about this goddamn country we live in right now.
I love my country.
You just got to stay in the middle. You just got to look at both sides. Both have positives and both have negatives. And that's the answer.
Right.
You can't be extreme anything. And my friend, I completely agree. Okay. Independent thinking is where it's at.
Absolutely. The Reform Party.
I'm not political. But I do think that you got to kind of look at both.
Well, the Reform... Yeah, absolutely.
In summation, we saw the MC5 touring under the name the MC50.
Yes, and they were amazing.
Now, personally, when the show ended and he said goodnight, I left the room. I was done. I know bands do quote-unquote fake encores, but I was out. So I went out to the lobby, and I bought the book, and I got the merchandise I wanted to get. But you saw two songs I didn't see because you were still there. So what were they, and how'd they sound?
The Great American Ruse and Looking at You. Looking at You is a cool song because that's one of their older tracks.
Aren't they all technically old, though?
Well,
we're talking about a band from 50 years ago.
Yeah, but you got to realize, though, this is also a band that is still covered to this day by, the likes of Rage Against the Machine, my God, Monster Magnet. The list goes on and
Paul
on.
Rollins. Is
Henry Rollins and Bad Brains. And I'm probably forgetting, 100 people. But
Yeah, man. It's just no bullshit rock and roll, man. I mean,
bro, I asked you how the songs were. I just asked you. How were the
songs? They were good, man. Ruse and Looking at You were cool. It was an odd set list, I thought, in order. I love those songs. I would have loved to have heard Over and Over. That's my, like, other than Kick Out of the Jams, that's my, by far, my favorite MC5 song. And that and Thunder Express. But Thunder Express that's more of
doesn't matter. I don't know what it is. You literally just said your favorite song is three different songs. Now, when I asked you, like, last podcast you were on, who's your favorite boxer? There were 17 people that were your favorite boxers. We're gonna wrap this up. So, Johnny Zero, thank you for being a guest.
Oh,
on the show.
Thanks for having me, man.
My name is VexX. This is the Vex on Vex podcast. This has been episode number 28. We are available on the Podbean application on your phone and carried by the Loud and Loaded network. So, Johnny Zero and myself are telling you to stay frosty.